So today, as we continue our series on practical metaphysics, I'm going to begin with an adaptation of a story entitled Acornology by John Needleman. It seems that once upon a time, in a place not too far from here, there was this very advanced civilization of acorns. And they lived under this magnificent oak tree. And they were highly civilized. I mean, for the baby boomer acorns, they took all sorts of self-improvement classes. I mean, things like, you know, how do you make the most of your shell? And how do I let go of my nutty story? Those kind of things. And then for the Gen Xers, Gen Zers, and Millennials, they spent a lot of time on their social media communicating with one another. And for the baby acorns that might have fallen from the trees prematurely, there was this really advanced hospital that served their needs. And everything was going along fine until one day, this strange-looking acorn fell from the sky, perhaps dropped by a bird. It was capless and dirty and bumpy and not very well received by the acorn community. And not only that, this new acorn told bizarre stories. One day, he looked up at the big oak tree and he said to them, "Hey everybody, we are that." Well, all the acorns thought, this acorn is deranged. He is just out of his mind. And they said, "How in the world could we, tiny little acorns that we are, ever become that?" And he said, "Well, I'm not sure that every single one of us is going to become that, but we all could become that." And they said, "And just tell us how." He said, "Well, I don't have it all figured out, but I think there's something about our dropping into the earth and then cracking open our shell." And they all went, "Oh my heavens, that's blasphemous, that's disgusting, that would be the end of us acorns." And isn't that the truth? But what the acorns do not realize is something that we sometimes do not realize, and that is we are more than what we think we are. We are absolutely more. Maybe we need to teach ourselves to open our shells of limitation, right, in order to be who we are. So 2 weeks ago, we began a series on a new book called Practical Metaphysics, compiled from transcripts of a class taught by Unity legend Eric Butterworth. Several people 2 weeks ago said to me, "Oh, I love Eric Butterworth. He has such a way with words," which he really does. And remember, we talked a couple weeks ago, there's the class, the original class, and we found this all on truthunity.net, a wonderful site. And remember, we said that the word metaphysics is a combination of the word meta, meaning beyond, and physics, meaning the physical world. Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore defines metaphysics as the systematic study of being that transcends the physical, is more than the physical world. Butterworth actually believed that metaphysics is not a thing to be studied, even though it is a branch of philosophy, not a thing to be studied, but to be practiced in order to enrich our lives. He says that when we demonstrate the truths in metaphysics, we become more healthy-minded, we can absolutely have healing, peace of mind, prosperity, greater love in our relationships, and greater peace in the world. He says this is the proof of the teachings, and we must live in expectation of that truth. So the first chapter that we looked at a couple weeks ago is entitled Allness of God. Remember that if you were here? And in that chapter, Butterworth says, God is an allness in which we all live as an eachness. Kind of typical Butterworth language there. We have to get our heads around it. God is an allness in which we all live as an eachness. And we know that God is omnipresent. We say that every single Sunday morning. So if God is omnipresent, present everywhere, that means the Spirit is always in its wholeness. So God is not just a little speck over here and a little speck over there and a little speck over there, but God manifests fully at every point of existence, which means God manifests fully where? And within. Everywhere and within. That's exactly right. So that leads us perfectly into chapter 2 of Eric Butterworth's book, which is called The Divinity of Man, or today we probably would call it The Divinity of Humankind. So today's question is, who do you think you are? Whenever I hear that question, it takes me back to third grade. I think I've talked about my third grade teacher before. Maybe I need to do some prayer work and release her from my consciousness, but anyway, I'll work on that. She was unbelievable. Her name was Mrs. Hammerstein, and of course, all the kids called her, appropriately I might say, Mrs. Hammerhead Shark. That was our nickname for her. And I mean, I can just see her whenever one of us displeased her, which was pretty much every moment of every day, she would put her hand on her hip in that triangle of power, and she would peer down over her glasses, and she would say, "Just who do you think you are?" Trust me, an individualized expression of God was not what she was looking for, okay? Butterworth says, in our quest to understand life and the universe, we must follow the advice of Socrates, who said, of course, know thyself. He says we must begin with ourselves and say to ourselves, I exist, I'm here, I think, I feel, I perceive, I am. This, according to Butterworth, is the starting point of our exploring our divine identity. So let's do this together. I'm not going to call these I am statements. I'll call them I statements, okay? Let's say these together, just like with all the power that we really mean it. Together, we'll go across. I exist. I'm here. I think. I feel. I perceive. I am. Now, certainly, as human beings having spiritual beings having human experience, each of us has an unlimited spiritual potential within. Paul calls this the hidden mystery of the ages, and I understand this was Charles Fillmore's very favorite Bible verse, and it is, Christ in you, your hope of glory. Butterworth says that this is a beautiful realization. It can change our lives. But unfortunately, the full sense of those words has been predominantly lost, these are Butterworth's words, throughout Christianity because Christ in you has been singularly interpreted as Jesus, the man, and actually the God. This isn't really what Paul had in mind when he said this. It ignores the divine possibility that he was suggesting. Now, certainly we know Jesus fully demonstrated the dimension of the Christ, but Christ is the God possibility within every single person, within all of us. Butterworth says, it is your hope of overcoming, it is your hope of healing, it is your hope of growing and doing the greater things that Jesus promised you could do. It's a depth of you, not something that can be added on or put into, or something you can get just by believing in somebody else, not even Jesus. It's that which is the reality of you from the beginning, the very foundation of your being. And in the first chapter of Genesis, we studied the creative process not too long ago. In the first chapter of Genesis, we read what Eric Butterworth describes as the most majestic statement in the Bible. And that is, God created man in his own image and after his likeness. Now, Eric Butterworth has a little different take on this, so let's see if we can get it. The image part of this, Butterworth says, is your divine identity. It's you as God sees you. And the likeness part is that which you work out in your own consciousness and then manifest in your body and affairs. For example, within you is a lot, but within you is the unborn possibility of a limitless life. That is our divine inheritance. We're all carrying that around. This is the image, and yours, he says, is the privilege of giving birth to it. So we have to take that image and manifest it in the world. He says that is our responsibility. It is your destiny to outform or produce a likeness of the divine image you already carry within. Remember at the burning bush when Moses asked the voice within, "Who shall I say sent me?" And what did the voice say? I am, absolutely. I am that I am. Now, the I am is God, of course, and the I am is also the God being experienced in each one of us. In fact, this is Butterworth's language for it, the divine image has new meaning if we think of it as an I amage. The image becomes an I amage. It is what was referred to in chapter 1 as your eachness within the allness of God. So Butterworth says, this I amage is our divine possibility. It's our divine potential. It's the divine depth within, no matter where you are in consciousness and no matter where you are in experience. In other words, no matter how stinking you're thinking, or no matter what you have failed to do, left undone, or done that you regret, no matter, you are divine in essence. Orthodoxy, of course, has preached, and some of us have learned in our first churches, that man is a poor, miserable sinner. Butterworth does not mince words here. These are his words, not mine. He says, this idea of man as a poor, miserable sinner is a deviously, I emphasize deviously, developed dogma that was created by early Christian leaders to portray Jesus as not human, to portray him as strictly and totally, completely God. And human beings as, guess what? Miserable, scum-sucking sinners. Okay? And what that does is it creates a separation between us and Jesus. It makes Jesus this paragon that we can never, ever emulate and never follow. And Butterworth says, it really totally loses the thrust of what Jesus really taught. First century Christianity was not about being a scum-sucking sinner. It evolved later. The heart of Jesus' teachings was, Eric says, the I am-ness of every single individual. And we know, Paul did a version of this today with the Daily Word. Nothing is impossible to you, Jesus said, nothing. And he went on to say, these things that I do, you shall do, and even greater things than these shall you do. Butterworth explains, this didn't set Jesus apart, you see. It didn't make him separate from us, but it says that there's a divine possibility in each one of us. Jesus discovered it, he demonstrated it, he spent his life teaching others how to experience it. And in the Sermon on the Mount, on the beautiful shores of the Sea of Galilee, Jesus addresses a group of peasants, farmers, laborers, and women who were considered outcasts by the church because they were too poor and too busy working to follow all the 641 laws of the mitzvah. And Jesus looks into their eyes and says to them, "Be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect," or as your Heavenly Father is perfect. Now, "be ye" in the day meant you are. You are perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. Now, the Aramaic word for perfect literally means complete. It means complete. It means whole. So Jesus is saying you are whole. You are complete. And he affirms here not just this group that he was talking to at the Sea of Galilee, and certainly not just a privileged few off in some temple in Jerusalem, but every single one of us, every single human being on the face of the earth is born in original goodness, completeness, and wholeness. That is who we really are. And Butterworth advocates we simply need to wake up to our true nature. He says, and see if this is true for you. I think in a way this was true for me. He says that too many spiritual seekers are initially motivated by a feeling of spiritual inferiority. We come to church because we're seeking something we think we don't have. He says we want to be more. We want to be better. And too often the spiritual quest becomes one of seeking, reaching, straining to get and become. We want to be more spiritual. And Eric Butterworth says, let me disillusion you. That is impossible. Why? What's impossible? Why is it impossible for us? Because we already are. That's exactly right. There is no way that you can ever become more spiritual than you already are, because being spiritual is your very nature. That's your fundamental truth. This is the I Am. You are created in God's image and likeness. Deep at the heart of you, there is a spiritual core that is absolutely, unequivocally the reality of you. You can never be, ever be anything else. So, what does all this mean for our daily lives? Because if it doesn't mean anything for our daily lives, Eric Butterworth would say, throw it out. Okay? What does it mean for our daily lives? Well, for one thing, I think it means we are not in a popularity contest. We don't have to give away our power by letting other people tell us who they think we are. Raise your hand if anybody's ever told you what they think you are. Probably everybody in the room. Can't be a human being without that, right? And some of it's well-intended, but it's not who you really are. It also means we can stop comparing and trying to compete with others. Why do we have to compete? We don't have to try to be better than other people. We simply need to wake up to our divine identity and become more of what we are, individualized expressions of the divine. In our work lives, our family interactions, and in all human relationships, the great key, Butterworth says, is to know our Christ potential, to know that each of us has more within us. And growth is about releasing those powers that we already have within. One of the new members got the book, Discover the Power Within, and that's what spiritual growth is about. Butterworth says, you have the capacity to reach higher and to achieve the very depths and heights of your potential God self. It's always present, and yours is the privilege of working at it today and every day of your life. Now, this takes away, it seems, our litany of excuses, does it not? I mean, it absolutely dispels what our beloved Reverend Randy Schmeling used to call the terrible twos. Maybe some of us are still in the terrible twos. This is what they sound like. I'm too young. I'm too old. I'm too inexperienced. I'm too weak. I'm too ill. I'm too stupid. I'm too busy. I'm too fill in the blank. Right? This kind of negative self-talk is not the truth of us. It's not the truth of us, and it's time to take a lie swatter to it. It's time to get rid of it, okay? I didn't create that. I don't know who did, or I'd give him credit, but I love it. To take a lie swatter to it. Butterworth reiterates that Jesus talked about and demonstrated that we can all achieve high evolution if we work at it and just practice it, make it a goal every day. He says, I believe this is where humans are going. He says, the pessimists will say, I'll tell you where they're going. They're going to, you know where, in a handbasket, right? That's what some people say. Just look at all that's going on in the world out there. And boy, if we want to, we can find lots of negative things to prove that theory, can we not? I mean, we can. Butterworth says, the fact is, we are innately creative and there's no way we can escape it. We may postpone it, and we can all do a good job of postponing. I know that I have in my life. We can deviate from it. We can prevent it. We can frustrate it. We can suppress it. But there's no way we can put it off forever, because this is the individual and collective destiny of humankind. And if we really want to see the nature of humanity, we need to see our fellow beings at their highest moments. Essentially, Butterworth says, and I'm paraphrasing here, if you want to see the potential of humankind, instead of focusing on acts of hatred and mass murder, instead of obsessing on the gory news, go to an art museum, listen to a symphony, or see the human potential flowing in somebody like Desmond Tutu or Mother Teresa or your very best friend. These are the ones who are demonstrating the divine potential unfolding. These are the people we need to model after. Butterworth says, Jesus was simply far ahead of his time, showing us the way. The difference between Jesus and each one of us is not anything about spiritual capacity. We have the same capacity, but it's about demonstration of that potential. Butterworth notes, Pilate and Jesus were one in regard to being. They had the same spiritual DNA, but miles apart in regard to the manifestation of their I am-age. And so, in the end, moment by moment, life is asking us the compelling question, who do you think you are? When the boss comes in and lays before you a project that seems impossible, when the doctor delivers a frightening diagnosis, when another human being tries to diminish you, when someone cuts you off in traffic, the question is, who do you think you are? And what is your answer? Butterworth says, don't sell yourself short. Return love and walk on. Be God's love and expression. And at times in this physical life, yes, you may appear to be sick, but your sickness is only a partial expression, a frustration of the whole of you. You may be short of funds. You may be out of work, but that doesn't really represent the divine potential for you. You are the I am-age of the divine process. You have a God potential within. Butterworth says, every time life presents you with a challenge of any kind, shape, or form, life is asking you, who do you think you are? And how do you respond? Try, I am. I am the Christ, the Son of the living God. I have the powers, the capacity to deal with this, and I have the strength to get through it. I am. I am one. I am whole. I am an infinite expression of divine possibility, and that possibility is limitless, and so it is. So let's take a moment now, before we go into prayer and meditation, to affirm the great truth about our God. This saying is being said in Unity churches all over the world, and it tells us that God is omnipotent. And it says, with me together, you all know it, or it's in your bulletin if you don't, for guess, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.